Hello, thank you for joining us for what should be a great game.
The fourth official couldn't allow him on because the fourth official never had the sheep.
Well, he overheated up the baby, did he? Unless he's breastfeeding, he should be all right.
Welcome along to another edition of the Football Family here on the 42 with me, Gavin Cooney, joined as ever by Shane Keegan. Hey, Shane.
How are you keeping, Gav?
And David Snaid. Hey, David.
Morning, what's the crack?
Right, I think we have to start with it. I see most of our listeners were at the game, but for the few that did miss out on the league decider for Beach Park, David, do bring us the report.
We got hockey, Jay. Yeah, we got B5-2. After all the build up, after all the talk and all the nonsense, I got dropped as well. Which, to be honest, I'm actually surprised that the manager went with younger, better, quicker, faster, stronger players than me. I've no idea what possessed them to do it. It was a strange idea and a strange tactic to go with players who were actually better than someone else, but. That thing, and you know what a point that Roy Keane makes about sometimes you just have to make a tackle to make yourself feel better. I went off that pitch feeling great because I know for a fact that I annoyed at least a couple of them. I would say the windiest of windbags when I'm playing. Like, I just like talk a lot. That's all. You know what I mean? But honestly, when you don't play a match and then you're watching it and it's not going well, but then there's a couple of tackles where you can actually know you can properly just. Go in, like, it does genuinely make you feel a little bit better.
You strike me as the sort of fella now whose special move in a row is to poke someone in the eye or something like that.
No, I think there's a difference between being a windbag and being a geebag, right? So how you act and how you carry yourself in those situations do tell a lot. No, it was just, what you call it, it was, at least at the end of the day, I suppose it's a game of football happening in a park. You want to enjoy it, don't you? But you know what? Remember I said it to you, right? Do you know what I don't understand? And I said it to one of the lads off the other team. It's like, I just don't understand why you'd want us to be like a prick about playing football at that age. Like, there was lads on that team who would definitely, like me, in their 30s, should just be there to have a bit of crack. Obviously, you want to win. But like, going around shouting and mouthing at people and all the rest of it. Like, why would you be arsed? Why would you be arsed? Like, what enjoyment? Like, I just don't understand that. Maybe that's just me, but I just.
But a 5-2 defeat in a game in which you were dropped, does that not bring you some kind of personal satisfaction?
Your correlation?
No, not at all. Because you also feel that shame of coming on in a team. I also made the point to one of the lads, I was like, the lads who got us in that position should have been kept on the pitch to suffer through it. So what's the point in bringing lads on when it was 4-1 down at that point? What's the point in bringing lads on at that point? You feel a sense of shame coming onto a team that bad getting hockeyed like that.
If only, Gav, if only more footballers spoke as openly as Snaid, we'd have a hell of a lot more to talk about, wouldn't we?
Our jobs would be a lot better, wouldn't they? Listener, I should also apologise for the absolute state of my voice. It's not in a good condition here. But it is in better nick.
Was that you roaring on the sideline for that match last year?
No, I was, my journalistic balance is I was studiously detached from it all.
But just one final point, because I'm very conscious of the fact that no one actually cares about this, right? And this is just me indulging myself. But in terms of talking openly, like, the absolute banger hash that was from their lion as well. So I went over to one of the linesmen who was, we actually had linesmen for the match. We don't normally have them for a normal league game, so normally it's just obviously the ref. But we had linesmen for this game, and I went over and I was just chatting to him after the match, and he was like, it was like being at Bob Marley's funeral.
Sorry, well, I was going to say that my beautifully crafted intro did say that my voice in a bad nick, but it is in better nick than Ireland's Nations League campaign. Armenia 1, Republic of Ireland 0. It's now time to get into this. So, David, what are your initial thoughts on the game, having thought about it for couple of days?
The one thing that is the only thing really, it would have been a more forgivable for performance 18 months ago, but I don't think it's the kind of performance that they should still be having now at this point into a campaign, in terms of even just how they were so disjointed towards the end of it and what they were resorting to. And regardless of being at the end of the season and maybe some players not being fit, I just thought it was really, really poor. Probably a worse feeling than, say, Luxembourg or Azerbaijan games, just because you felt as if they were maybe getting past that, beyond that point a little bit, even though there's still been issues. And listen, the Lithuania game, when it took a 97, 96 minute goal to actually get Ireland over the line, and that would maybe should have been more of a warning, but it just felt a bit more disappointing than previous results, to be honest. That's me overriding thing on it.
Shane, do you agree? The more disappointing than Luxembourg and Azerbaijan at home?
The more disappointing, I'm not sure if I'd say as damning, but definitely more disappointing for exactly the reasons that David has listed there, in that you just felt that, not that those days were behind us, but that we should be further down the road. We definitely should be further down the road at this stage. So the fact that it's kind of deja vu all over again, it's just so frustrating. It really, really is just so frustrating. But I would argue that it didn't take Nostradamus to predict it might happen, like, at the same time, do you know? You know, you put together the elements of the weather, the long season, the bit of a break since the end of the season, our lack of creativity in the final third, the way they were going to set up, the fact that I do think they're better than the vast majority of the Irish public probably give them credit for and realise. And yeah, there were a lot of factors feeding into it. It still shouldn't happen. But I don't think we should be entirely shocked that it did.
Just a couple of points that even stand out. First of all, so in the Slack, in the work Slack channel, which I don't think Shane is on. No, we put in, I'll watch and think the score will be. And genuinely was, I put in 2-1. I thought Ireland would win 2-1. I was thinking could be a bit of a sloppy start, which I thought maybe fed into Armenia playing a bit well. But I thought Ireland would win 2-1. I think a lot of people, I can't remember what Gav predicted.
I went 2-1.
Yeah, 2-1 as well.
Same as them.
Because there was a confidence, wasn't there? Like, as what you're saying, there just felt as if there was a bit more of a confidence. And like, even in that first half, where I don't think it was the worst. Like, it wasn't great, but there were still moments where Ireland created, like, a better striker. Like, made this point, like, if you had a striker, like, say, of a world-class striker, you're probably going to be 2 or 3 nil up in that first half with the chances that Ireland actually created. The most worrying aspect was just how Armenia were able to get the initiative back totally in that second half and were able to actually sense it and then capitalise on it. And the fact that Ireland just hadn't got a reaction whatsoever, that's why I was saying it just felt as if, hopefully it's an anomaly, but it's a worry if something so bad that should have been rectified is still happening.
It's not really an anomaly, is it? Because it happened Luxembourg at home, Azerbaijan at home, and now Armenia away. I mean, the secret is out. If you sit deep against Ireland, give them the ball, Shane, they're not going to cause you any bother.
That 100%, Gavin. Look, not to be building up too much, but your piece yesterday was absolutely bang on. I thought it hit pretty much every key point, really, in terms of why what happened. That's what I'm saying. It can't be a surprise. Like, this is us. We struggle, and like you said, it's not to let Stephen off the hook, but it's a before Stephen issue. It's an after Stephen issue. And how the hell we go, rather than sit here and whinge and moan about it. You know, if you're trying to be, you know, any teams that I look after, I always kind of say to my players, listen, you can come to me with any complaint or any issue that you have, so long as you have a suggested solution. And that's kind of the motto I throw at them. And, you know, it's all very, very easy for us to come with the issues, but I'll tell you, there won't be too many of us able to come up with too many suggested solutions as to how we fix it. Neither short term, long term, a little bit more of a hope. It's going to need a drastic reshift again, I think, in terms of the coaching focus at underage levels. But in the short term, I don't know.
Okay, I have to say, there's a lot more hopelessness in your voice now than I thought there would be.
Yeah.
A remark. I'm not trying to be funny.
Yeah,
there.
But that's the point.
Yeah, it's because I'm normally, and I am I suppose my default, you know, I'm not going to hide away from it. I will say straight out, my default mechanism is to go on the defensive for Stephen and to fight for him. And that just comes from his background, I suppose, and my admiration of him as a man. And, you know, I do think you can still put forward excuses, really, that's all they are, as to why what happened and why he was kind of had one arm tied behind his back a little bit. I mean, you know, where has our creativity come in previous games? I think it's primarily it's come from either Callum Robinson making something happen or Callum Robinson being on the end of something that happens, right? His last 3 months of his season at club level were a non-event. Like, they were an absolute non-event. And without him in top form, he is the one player who I've consistently said offers us something different. Now, again, you look at solutions. I will keep coming back to it. I know it's League of Ireland level, but I will keep coming back to Jack Byrne as potentially being the only other one that I think could do something similar. But if you're relying on Callum Robinson, and the man has played so little minutes in the last 3-4 months, and he's your main creative force, you know, it didn't surprise me.
But just, and I know we're conscious that we're talking about a game that happened a few days ago, but even people who are listening, like, the thing is, Ireland did create them. Like you were saying there, we can't create problems for teams to sit in. In the first half, they did. Like, Ireland should have been 2, possibly 3.
Benny should have scored, Callum Robinson should have scored, without a doubt.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah, like, so, like, that, to be honest, what's more disappointing is the second half. Like, because it's not as if, I'd be a lot more, like, I know you threw it out, and again, what Shane said is right. Like, I remember reading, when I read your piece, it was pretty much hit the nail on the head in terms of just laying things out and where the problems were. But you also mentioned the fact that there were chances and the XG, blah, blah, blah. But, like, the fact is, Ireland did create chances. So, do you just say, though, do you know what, that's still going to happen because of the calibre of player we have. If you look at the team, like, the players who are there, yeah, they're capable of playing better and they're capable of doing more, but where they're at in their careers, you're going to have those, probably still going to have those games as well when stuff like that doesn't come off. Do you know what I mean? What the biggest worry and the biggest concern and the most, why I'd be more, even more disappointed with that was just how totally things faded in the second half. Do you know what I mean? I actually thought the first half, while it was far from perfect and was still, you still thought, you know what, they can play better here. Considering lads hadn't maybe played for a while and it wasn't it post-season, effectively post-season for a lot of lads, they were kind of playing their way into the game. I was fully expecting Ireland to come out in the second half. I thought Armenia might tire. I thought their centre-back, the captain, was superb. Absolutely tremendous.
Listen, David, you need to get that lad's mobile number onto Ten Hag, I'll tell you that.
But like, I'd say he was injured. He was grimacing from the first couple of minutes in terms of putting in tackles. I'm not saying it's the same, but like, we talk about Richard Dunne's performance in Russia and all the rest of it, but just early on, like, he was quality in that game. Everything, the way, not even just like smashing lads and realising he could get away with it, which is good, but he was just the way he read the game. There was a couple of, even, yeah, he came over, I think it was closing down Robinson when he was slipped through and he could have got a shot away. But just really, at one point he was like bleeding. Beckenbauer coming out where he read the ball, intercepted, it came out, nutsed Callum Robinson and set the move away. And I think Ditton Armenia nearly scored just after that as well. Like, he was just brilliant. But, and then I'll be honest, that's a criticism I would have of the Irish attackers. I thought they kind of bottled it a little bit. I thought Callum Robinson stopped showing for the ball. I thought maybe that's one of the reasons why midfielders faded from get play as well a little bit too, because the same runs and the same kind of options that would have been there, even the feet weren't there because he actually wore them down. Maybe bottled it is a bit harsh, and it actually is a bit harsh. I'll take that back. I just think maybe they kind of got worn down by him a little bit and they weren't making the same options for the midfielders. But there was, that's why I was saying about the disappointment. They just faded across the board in that second half.
To try and put your opinion, I suppose, into numbers, as I tend to do, like, so I'll give you the definition first, and then I'll ask you to have a quick stab at it, David, right? A deep completion is a pass, any pass excluding crosses.
That sounds like a random category on Pornhub.
I knew you were going there. I knew you were going there. Sorry, listeners. Okay, come back to me here. Deep completion. Any pass, excluding crosses, that was received in a 20-meter radius from the opponent's goal line. Right? We had only.
Right. Give that one more time, because there's a lot for us to process there. So
any pass, excluding crosses, that was received in a 20-meter radius from the opponent's goal line. That makes sense. Okay, yeah, yeah, we had two players on the pitch who managed to do that more than once in the entire game. We had only two players on the pitch who managed that more than once in the entire game.
So that tells you that there was a lot of sideways passing. Oh. And there was a... And there was no penetration to the passing.
And you know what? That even just sums it up. Was John Egan one of those players?
No, John Egan had none. We had three players with one. Alan Brown, after coming on, Callum Robinson had one. Nathan Collins had one. Could you guess the two that one player had three and one player had four?
Jeff Hendrick definitely had four, I think.
Jeff Hendrick had four. Spot on.
Josh Cullen.
Nah. You see, the passes can be played within the final third, so the other one is actually Ogbeni, who was the other who was the other decent performer. But I just like that to me. You've got if the opposite, you're literally playing practically the game in their final third. So you are. So you have to that number. You have got to have half a dozen players who are completing at least kind of three of those passes each.
And why aren't they?
I was surprised Josh Cullen didn't. I think Josh Cullen, for a holding midfielder, has an excellent passing range. And I'm not sure whether he wasn't on his game or whether he wasn't seeing enough in front of him happening. Do you get me? I don't know whether it's kind of chicken and egg in terms of why it wasn't happening with him. I would normally bank on him to be able to come up with a few of them. And then, as I say, Callum Robinson, I would have thought, should be the man topping that list normally.
And I'd be curious just to say on them when they happen. You mentioned Alan Brown, but I would bank most of them, even for Hendrick, were all in the first half. That's what I'm saying. I just think there was options slowing up, even in terms of runs. Because even the moment, you know what I summed it up as well for that, was when Ogbeni seemed to be getting in, and I'm not forgetting his name, the captain again, who was exceptional for
me.
Harry-Anne, like his tackle on Ogbeni, where he kind of shot, like that was just superb. But I just think, honestly, I don't know, I wasn't at the match, I know Gav was, but it kind of, you always need lads shown. Because I thought Ireland mixed it up really well. Like, I thought in the first half, I don't know if it was, it seemed to be a tactic where Cullen was the one who wanted to play wide and wanted to play things a bit shorter. And Hendrick, in that first half, he was ignoring anyone who was either to the side of him, and he was constantly either chipping it over or playing the true balls forward. I thought he was really positive, and I was thinking that it's clear that that's something that they've worked on. Because I thought they actually mixed it up relatively well. They were by no means perfect, but I just thought everything in the second half, just attitude to the game and confidence and just a belief, just totally disintegrated.
I think Hendrick has got a lot of unfair stick after the game, as he usually does. Definitely. In Ireland games.
100%.
He was Ireland's best player in the first half. If anyone was going to find the pass to get through that defence, it was going to be him. Second half, I think the problem is he just physically wilted. He's played 69 minutes of club action since Ireland's last friendly game, which is against Lithuania at the end of March.
I saw him getting so much stick post-game, Gav, that I was genuinely going... I'm starting to think I'm wrong here. I must be wrong here. Yeah.
You're never wrong. Don't worry. You're never wrong.
But it's curious. Your final point on that. It strikes me as strange, because I mentioned that earlier with John Egan. Like, I thought that was supposed to be his whole point in that team. Maybe Nathan Collins can take it on a bit more, but Egan's the one who's able to step out. Egan's the one who's able. Remember, wasn't there a point when Kenny was talking about when he's our most creative player? Yeah. And he's the one.
Specifically on Egan, just because it triggers it in my mind, I don't know if you were there, David, when Kenny took us into his analysis bunker to show us clips of good Irish play after he got his contract. He did show a clip, again, the home game against Azerbaijan, where he talked about needing to inject pace into the passing. And he played a clip of Egan playing a pass that I would imagine would be described, Shane, under your stats metrics, as a deep completion. It's just a 30-yard pinged ball straight ahead of him into the feet of Aaron Connolly, who got down the side, chipped a ball into the box, and Adam Eda headed wide. It was good from Aaron. It was good play. Like, I mean, it was a way of getting through the defence. But Egan didn't do that on Saturday. And I think one of the biggest issues is just the lack of match fitness in the squad. Was Hendrick wilted in the second half because he hasn't played. And like, Ireland really looks so unfit against a team that should not be looking less fit than, because Armenia are they are the highest average age of any team in the World Cup qualifiers last year in Europe. So 55 nations, they're the oldest. And yet they looked a lot more sprightly than Ireland. So, like, was the team selection wrong there? Should players have been prioritised according to match fitness, and then you worry about the system and the combinations and everything after that. Should the very first factor in team selection not be match fitness and match sharpness? Shane?
But then we've had players who've done it kind of previously for him, fellas who have not had minutes and come in. I thought my biggest question mark, Gav, is what is the key message being delivered from the management to the players going into the game, right? And what I mean when I say that is, if you take the difference between a Guardiola team and a Klopp team, right? Like, with a Guardiola team, it seems to be, you know, we do not give away the ball, you know, we're really strategic in terms of how we get it into the final third, and then, you know, we rely on some fantastic combination stuff in the final third, but they are primarily possession-based. Like, we don't have enough individual quality to be that possession-focused and that careful about how we go about things. I think we're far, far more suited to be a Klopp team than a Guardiola team, which is still treat the ball with respect, you know, keep it, yes, maintain possession to the best of your ability. But I would say our focus need, against smaller nations, I think our focus needs to be constantly try and make the penetrating pass happen. And if it means we give away the ball a hell of a lot, well, okay, we'll give away the ball more than we probably would like to, but let's deal with the repercussions of that, and let's plan for how we're going to deal with that when it happens, and how we can pounce back on them or retreat or whichever way we want to deal with it when we're... But I just don't think... It seemed to me that there was a little bit of a fear almost amongst the players about giving the ball away. And I don't think there should be a fear about giving the ball away. I would say, you know, in League of Ireland terms, go for that Jack Byrne pass. Keep going for that Jack Byrne pass. Look and see, is it on? And let's have your instinct to try and do that.
Shane, are there players in the team on Saturday capable of playing that pass?
I think Robinson. John, when you've hit the nail there, I think John Egan. Like, the player I was most disappointed with in this game was John Egan. Without a doubt. I mean, we talk about the lack of natural tens, but as you've just highlighted, like, that pass, you know, can absolutely come from much deeper. And they were the two. Now, okay, because of the way they set up, I will say, okay, because they said of the shape that they set up, normally if an opposition team are playing with one up front, well, then that means that the two outside centre halves will have a lot of space to step into and a lot of passing lanes. With Armenia setting up with the two up front, it does block up those lanes a little bit more, okay? It does block up. But still, I would have been looking for those two players to have tried. And I've tried to look back at it and tried to see, is it more a lack of movement in front of them, or is it more of a lack of ability, not even ability to play the pass, because we know they have, but an intent to play the pass? And I don't know. I thought it was intent on this occasion.
A couple of things that maybe the point you made there earlier about saying to your own players, oh, come if you have solutions or if you have stuff, come with it. It's actually funny because my wife says that to me all the time about if you have to cancel plans, at least come with something to offer something else. But like, I actually think when you're playing in those teams, and we didn't have it, is if you have runners from midfield, like an Alan Brown, lads getting into the box who just create, and it was in. Just something a little bit different. Like, at no point really were any of Ireland's midfielders actually running and to get into the box and just dragging lads or bringing lads in and creating an extra bit of space or just doing something a bit different. It was all very formulaic a little bit. But that's where, like, an Alan Brown, some of the moments that Alan Brown's had with his goals, like, even go back to the, like, getting into the box, having that run, it just naturally creates a bit of confusion and a bit of a difference. It's the one thing I think, and I don't know how you do it. You will be shocked to hear this. I don't know how you go about changing the system and how you get the balance right and how you would do it. But that will be something if you're looking at, well, how can you break teams down a bit more? How do you do something different? Is having those runners maybe from midfield and lads, just even if it's not usually, again, just saying, listen, just make a break into the box. And we saw that it hasn't been mentioned, and I'm shocked we've got this far without a sports player being mentioned, but it just shows you what we lose when Doherty's not on the side now. Like, you mentioned it in your piece, Gav, about how he can link up with Hendrick, and maybe that's one of the reasons why Hendrick faded a little bit too, where you kind of realise, well, do you know what, the lack of options. But like that intent and that ability to get around the outside or cut inside and create an extra body in midfield, or even when the ball's on the opposite side from the left and have that ability to be getting in and getting in around the back post. Like we missed that massively, but that's something I would say is just mixing it up by, and it's not having long balls, it's just creating more runners. And look, I don't know.
I'll come back to the right wing back issue in a minute, but to further prove the point you're making, and don't get me wrong, I am absolutely not advocating for us to go back to this style of play at all. But the fact that, you know, we did seem so formulaic, and, you know, there was a need for something different potentially to happen, that the game comes on the same day that we're seeing the Niall Quinn flick on to Robbie Keane for the goal against Germany, the anniversary of that goal. You're looking and you're going, ah, like if we just, you know, what would we have given? What would we have given for a 6 foot fucking 3 or 4 fella to flick a ball on for Ogbene just to run onto and put the ball in the back of the net, you know?
But you know what the thing is? People forget, in that game though, that was near the end, Ireland outplayed Germany in that game. Ireland were the better team than Germany in that game. Now listen, that was kind of the last of those type of Germany teams, and Germany still got to the final of that World Cup. But when you, like, that came at a point where it was kind of last resort a little bit. Ireland hadn't been playing. That's why we're talking about this now, in terms of, like, it had got to the point where that's all Ireland were trying to do. That's like, Ireland weren't even able to keep the ball. Like, it had gone so far removed. And even in terms of formula, I don't think trying to keep the ball and move the ball is the wrong thing. What happened more so in the second half was Ireland stopped doing that. Do you know what I mean? Like, Ireland actually, if Ireland had continued to play as they played in the first half, I think the breakthrough would have came. Ireland just had stopped doing that, even. And then it's, in terms of formula, like, it should be part of it where you have those runners. You have to, surely you have to, a team like Ireland, like what you mentioned earlier, like, they're not good enough to just pass a team to death like a City, or even do what Liverpool do, because the calibre of player, it's obvious, it's just not there. So you have to be able to have different, I don't know, elements within a game plan that is within the one game plan. Not that it just feels right, this didn't work, so we do this, that didn't work, so we do that. Like, lads should be confident enough in their own, and the management should be confident to say, well, listen, we'll do this, then we can do this, or do it. I don't know how it works, listen, fuck me, I can't be 5-2 and be parked the other day, like, Jesus Christ. I'm just saying, like, there's no different problem, and I thought that was what Kenny had been going to do well. He's shown that in terms of changing it and mixing things up a little bit, whereas that's why, again, it goes back to the start. This just felt so disappointing, because it just felt as if so much progress that seemed to have been made had dissipated.
So we've been chatting for, 25 minutes now. I have to say, I'm not as depressed as I was at the start of the call, because I looked at this game and I look at, in conjunction with Azerbaijan at home and Luxembourg at home, and think we have a serious fundamental problem against these teams. But as you've both explained it there, you know, we were creating chances in the first half. There may be a match fitness issue that played into the second half collapse. There are other factors as well. We're not making excuses. But to go back to Shane, what you were talking about, intent and fear. Like, is that actually the only thing? Is it a mindset thing then that's stopping Ireland from really committing to? Because I talked to Benny after the game, and he used this very interesting phrase when he was talking about the fact that the ball speed was too slow. And he said there's a bit of complacency in it. You know, you feel like just because you're having the ball, you're doing what you're meant to do. So how do you flip that switch? How do you say, okay, don't pass 10 yards sideways, ping it 20 yards ahead of you, and then if it breaks down, it breaks down. You have to accept that. You have to accept that risk.
Yeah, as I say, it's a bit of a head scratcher in terms of what the message is coming, because, I mean, the last thing, certainly in Dundalk, I can tell you from any of the players that were there during Stephen's time, that were there when I was up there for a while, the last thing any player would ever accuse Stephen of doing was making them step out onto the field with any fear, because he was the complete opposite of that. He made them feel 10 foot tall, and if anything, he would, you know, be maybe a little bit shy on the tactical detail and just leave it to themselves, or not completely leave it to themselves, but almost, you know, give them the structure and then say, now look, once you get over the halfway line, you're the guys with ability here, just play what you see and do what you feels natural to you. So, like, it's impossible for me to think that he is over prescribing a game plan to them, really, to be honest. He has an absolute set way of playing, and he has his ideals and all of that kind of thing, but not to an extent that they impinge on the players' freedom to play, I wouldn't have thought. So, you know, and again, maybe it's because I want to believe this, but I am, you know, I am putting this more on the players than I would be on Stephen. I just don't know what was, you know, why that intent wasn't there, or why they were just that bit lackluster. Maybe it's, as you say, it's, is it just the time of the season or what it is? But you would hope and expect to see a dramatic improvement over the next three. There has to be a dramatic improvement in over the next three. Now, I realise, obviously, the first one in particular, Wednesday night's game, is a very, very different challenge. And that's probably a good thing. That's definitely a good thing, I think.
So Shane, to cut across, but just to clarify, you're not saying, you don't look at that Armenia game and say that Ireland are doing the wrong things. You say that they're doing the right things, but they're just not doing them well enough.
Yeah, or not doing it often enough, or not. Yeah, like I would have loved to have seen the players take more risks. And I find it hard to believe that the reason they're not taking risks is because Stephen has scared them into a state of not taking risks. You know, I just don't believe that. That's not his way of going about things. I would have thought that he is absolutely the kind of manager who says, listen, go and try something. Once you're in the final third, once you're not doing Cruyff turns on your own, the edge of your own 18-yard box, once you're in the final third, go
like
and
Brian Gartland.
Like Brian Gartland.
in the fucking snow.
Yeah. But I would have thought that he's the kind of fella who says go and try and play that incisive pass, you know, three times, and if it ball turns over twice but you pull it off once, well, I'll take that kind of a ratio, you know. So I think he needs to hammer that message. I think all the staff need to hammer that message through to not so much even heading into the Ukraine game, but heading into the next game where we expect it to be a game where we have the vast majority of possession.
Yeah.
Is there also an element where, like, because of the nature of it, you just have to accept the inconsistency because of the players that they are as well? Do you know what I mean? Like, look where all the players are playing at. Like, sometimes, regardless, you just have to accept that there's going to be inconsistency in performance because that's where, right, they're international players, granted, but it's like Gatton, if you're like a mid-ranking team or a lower-ranking team if it's a club team, sometimes you just have to accept that there's going to be really, really bad performances.
Okay.
But the issue is not losing the game. That's where the problem is. How do you not lose?
Yeah, you see, where I'm struggling with that a small bit is, you can have inconsistency of execution, okay? But my problem, David, is I don't feel that we tried to play incisive passes but failed. If we tried to play incisive passes and failed, now your argument stands up perfectly that, you know, sometimes they get those passes right, sometimes they get those passes wrong. My problem is I don't think that we tried to play those passes.
In the first half we did, and then we stopped.
Yeah.
That's the issue. Like, that's what it comes back to. That's where the disappointment comes from, is that something happened either in the game when the game was happening, the players and whoever just weren't able to wrestle back a bit of control. Because Armenia took the control in the second half very quickly. Like, even just in terms of how they were in their shape. And there was moments where, again, because of how their defence was playing, and maybe that was feeding into that sense of positivity. But it was just, that's the most disappointing part of all, is the fact that Ireland just stopped doing anything progressive or confident in that second half.
And
that's the most worrying aspect of all.
And the other thing that came back to my mind, Gav, and this is absolutely shameless on my behalf now, completely shameless on my behalf. But I'm going to run with it anyway. Like, Stephen has, because of the team he built at Dundalk and because they were so powerful and all-conquering, Stephen has so much experience of managing a team who are playing against an opposition team who drop off and defend their own 18 yard box, that, you know, I would have thought in his head, he knows, he's been there before, he knows the right things to say and the whole lot. But I'm watching the game, and I'm watching the game unfold, and now I'm talking about a season in which we got relegated, right, with Galway United, and we got relegated because we went the first seven games of the season without picking up a win. But our first win of the season that year was against Dundalk against Stephen Kenny managed Dundalk, where we absolutely parked the entire team on the edge of our own 18-yard box and defended and just defended and defended and defended. And then in the, I think, like literally 93rd minute, a guy called Gary Shanahan broke on the counter-attack and we scored a goal and won the game 1-0. But you're looking at it, and that's, I'm watching the game the other night and I'm going, whoa, this looks dangerously like that game from back then. And my point is, he's had so much experience that, you know, I think he, I would like to think, you know, he is, he's experienced, he knows, you know, it's not like this is new. It's not like this is new to him, you know, trying to break down a team in and around the edge of the 18. And it's frustrating that they haven't been able to come up with the solutions. He hasn't, they haven't, whichever way you want to put it, haven't been able to come up with the solutions of a scenario that we should be getting better at dealing with.
Maybe bodes well then, the fact that we're going to have two games where it's not going to, you can't imagine it's going to be the same. Like, it kind of would give, that's why I'd be surprised if there's massive changes in personnel, because some of the players who played, or there could be little tweaks here and there, but some of the players who've done well could actually thrive against, like, you watch Ukraine the other day, like, they're really impressive. Mm. But like, whether or not they're still going to have that level of intensity after two very highly emotionally charged games would be interesting, you know?
Just before we leave Armenia, because we did get a few questions into the WhatsApp group that I wanted to run through, and I think Matty asked what I think is the central question to ask after this game, and given the pattern of these games in which Ireland are struggling against group fodder, can it be discussed, lads, why are we playing three at the back against the likes of Armenia? I have a lot of thoughts. It should be four at the back against the likes of that opposition. Now I came away from that thinking we have to change something here. Why do we need three centre backs passing it to each other in their own half here? But not to put words in your mouth, Shane, but it sounds like maybe you don't think that you just have to, you know, it's not necessarily change the system, but you know, do plan B is do plan A better.
Yeah. Listen, I have so many thoughts on this. Like, again, to go back to my own experience, you will not have to, if you walked into Eamon DC Park, you will not have to search very hard to find somebody who will tell you that the main reason Galway were relegated under me that season is because I never deviated from three at the back. So that's probably the first point I'd make. It is my preferred system. The reason it's my preferred system is because it gives you a platform to attack. It's not that I want an extra defender there for defensive purposes. I just feel that when it's done right and when your two outside centre halves are comfortable stepping in and carrying the ball and breaking lines and playing incisive passes, I think it gives you a fantastic platform to attack from. And I think you automatically hear three at the back and you think, oh, defensive. You know, it's a defensive mindset. Like, Stephen has chosen that system because it gives him a platform to build out from the back from. Now, the other thing I'd throw in is we were playing against a team who technically were playing two up front. And if we didn't play three at the back, it's quite risky to go 2v2. Now, you know, hindsight will tell you, well, it didn't pay off to have the three at the back anyway. But, no, yeah, I think Stephen will double down, and I would probably double down if I was in his shoes as well. And I know that will infuriate a lot of our listeners and possibly even you and David.
If you look at Ukraine, as well, I was just double checking because I watched their game. Like, they seem to play a variation of a 4-1-4-1 essentially. So also from a defensive point of view, it will make more sense against it. It depends on what Ukraine are going to do team wise, but makes more sense, the spaces that they were able to find still, even with like Wales, who played three at the back and had the wing backs, like defensively it's going to make sense against a team of Ukraine who moved the ball very quickly to have that three at the back as well, to be honest.
And like Gavin, I always try and try and make things as practical in my head as possible. So let's look at Saturday to Wednesday. What is actually going to happen from Saturday to Wednesday within that group, right? You've got a handful of sessions. You're already starting to taper down by the time you hit Tuesday. Obviously, you're going to do very, yeah, very little kind of heavy work. You've probably got one proper session. And as I said to you last day, maybe it was the week before previous. Anyway, we broadcast recently where I was actually sitting in the lobby getting ready to head into the UEFA Elite License thing that I was doing. And It was real. We had one part of that day that was brilliant. It was with Paula Sam. Paula Sam came in. They have this giant mat that they put on the ground that has all the tactical pieces. And Paula Sam gave us a tactical dilemma that the team were facing heading in to play a game against Serbia with the Irish 16s. And it was brilliant. It was very, very real. It led to a great conversation. He basically said, we had one proper session. He says, there's three or four things that you want to prioritise, but you've got one proper session. You've got to choose of those three or four things, which is the number one priority and which is the one that is going to get the primary emphasis in the training session. That's exactly the dilemma Stephen now has. There are a lot of things that he wants to fix from the other night. He only has one proper session. So he's got to emphasize one of those things to work on the most. And for me, it's not a change of system. How the hell he's meant to get a proper system change from Saturday to Tuesday to Wednesday with one training session, I don't think it's possible.
Yeah.
For me, your one session is absolutely worked on what the team are doing when the outside centre halves have the ball. And that's it. It's what are they doing? What's going on in front of them? I would be amazed if that hasn't been the session that's been prioritised for what would it have been, yesterday's session?
Yeah. I don't think there'll be a change of system. I don't think anyone's expecting a change of system between Saturday and Wednesday. I think, is there a case, though, to change the system when Armenia are in Dublin in September, when we're away in the World Cup qualifier group or at home to work in the World Cup qualifier group to the fifth seed? You know, these games in which Ireland are struggling so much and getting undone by screamers, they're getting undone by screamers because they're not scoring enough to eliminate the fact that they're decisive. Would you change then, David?
It's one of them where it's almost like you could do it a couple of friendlies then, couldn't you, just to actually, to it's probably one of the downsides then of the Nations League. But then also, it shouldn't be a case of the management and the coaching staff kind of looking on it, not learning the job, because he's not doing that. They should know what their plans are for different scenarios now. Do you know what I mean? Like, again, like, I would base it off the fact that I don't think they need to change too much playing against the likes of Armenia in the first half by how they're playing. It's basically how they react in certain situations. That's the issue here. That's the bigger problem that I've still faced with this is the fact that because you've seen, and in all the games, there have been chances created, be it either set pieces or creating it from free play. And yeah, even if it's not a huge amount of chances, if you're still creating them at that level, you should be scoring them. The chances Ireland had in those games, in that game especially, they should be scoring them. At that level, you need to score them. And that's where I think it's like more a case of saying, well, stick with it, and then it's more what you want to see is, within games, players, like what we said, just not fading so badly and being able to have that purpose in what they're playing with. Of course, you need to be able to play separate ways. And sure, I can't remember the exact way, but it did happen against Lithuania when, as the game wore on, that the system did seem to change a little bit. There seemed to be a couple more bodies in midfield and fewer at the back. But that should just be a given that players were able to do that in the game. I don't know.
So I'm coming away from this conversation. We'll move on to look ahead to the Ukraine and we'll chat some 21s in a couple of minutes. But just to kind of park the Armenia game, I'm kind of coming away from having talked to, and we've kind of talked to at good length there, that's as much a mentality or a mental issue as much as anything else. Like when Shane, you talk about intent and passing, and when David, you talk about the reaction to going behind, it seems to be as much a mental problem as anything else.
Yeah, it does. And I'm going to say it one last time, right? I love Jack Byrne, right? Because Jack Byrne is one of the most confident young men you will ever meet in your entire life in his own ability, right? And that is why his intent is always there. Always there. And what probably proved it to me there recently was that recent Shamrock Rovers Derry game. Cameron Dunigan absolutely bossed Jack Byrne for about 70, 75 minutes. And, you know, Jack Byrne was having a bad night. And yet, final 15 minutes when he picked up the ball, it was still, I'm going to be the match winner here. I'm going to try and find that pass. it's not even that I'm saying we need Jack Byrne in the side. I just love his intent. I love his attitude. I love his, I'm the man here. I'm going to make something happen. And that's why I enjoy watching him so much. We just need, to me, we need more players with that mindset. And they can be outside centre halves. They do not have to be number 10s. It's just that there's players walk out onto the field in a game where we're expected to be the boss. There's players walking out into that field going, do you know what? I am going to make sure that doesn't happen again, because I'm going to try and open them up 4 or 5 times in this game tonight. And it might come off 3 or 4 times, but if it comes off once and we put the ball in the back of the net, well then, you know, that's, I'm happy to take that chance.
Okay, very briefly, because it is tangentially related to your point, Graham asked a question in the WhatsApp group that I did want to get in, asking, was it a mistake not to include Jamie McGrath, this squad, or a similar creative player? He acknowledges that Byrne and Ronan, Conor Ronan, are both struggling with fitness and injuries. Was it a mistake not to include McGrath in that squad for the game against Armenia?
I don't think that's Jamie's skill set. I don't think Jamie McGrath is that kind of player. Jamie McGrath is a fantastic player, but I wouldn't think that Jamie's more about scoring great goals himself, really, than he is about giving incisive passes. Jack isn't fully fit, but at the same time, he hadn't been. I think it was kind of, he was fully fit when the squad was named, I think. I think he's lack of fitness.
He was on standby, wasn't he?
Yeah, because he was in, exactly, he was on standby. I would love to see Jack on the squad. I would love to see Jack get a start and given kind of 80 minutes regardless of how the game is going, because sometimes it does take till the 70th, 75th minute for him to come up with that magic. I'd hate for him to walk out into the field and feel he has to produce it in the first 45. I would have him in there 100%, Gav. I don't know who else we have who can produce, who naturally gives that kind of pass, to be honest, which I'd be struggling for any other options.
Yeah. Okay. Ukraine on Wednesday. David, what happens with the team, do you think?
Like what Shane said, I don't think the system will change, because I just think it gives that base defensively, but also if they do to be a bit more positive to get Ireland on the front foot. Like, it depends maybe how Ukraine are as well. Like, I'll be honest, if Ukraine play to the same level that they played against Wales, it'll be a very, very tough game. Like, there's still vulnerabilities there, but they are very impressive. Now, it was a World Cup playoff, so you're probably thinking, obviously, you're going to throw everything into it, but they still have to put that performance together, and they were really impressive in terms of how they moved the ball and just how quick and how quick and incisive they were. Like, again, on another day, they could be 2-0 before Wales score. I think it needs to be fresh. Yeah, I think it does need to be fresh. And I wouldn't be surprised if maybe Jason. I wouldn't be surprised if Robinson drops out, because even from a couple of points of view of he hasn't been great, even for, as Shane mentioned, for the end of the season with West Brom. But if you go back to it before, Kenny's kind of pointed it out as well. Back to back games, he struggles with the physicality of it, or even just that fitness wise. So I would not be surprised if he drops out at all, to be honest. I think Ogbeni will play. I think he was impressive. He kind of provided that outlet. I don't know. You're looking through it and thinking the options who can come in. Like, I don't know. Like, there's no even I'm saying that about Robinson, but who can come in straight away and feel and do what he does, because he has that capability of running behind and dropping deep. And does Will Keane do that? I don't know. Like, this is where it's a bit of an issue. Truthfully, succinctly, I think there should be a couple of little changes in the team. I just don't know.
Yeah,
I just don't know what he'll do.
I think he needs to stick with Callum Robinson. I think he absolutely needs to stick with Callum Robinson. I think he needs to try and give him as many minutes as possible and allow himself to play himself back in some kind of form over the course of these 4 games, because I do think that he is the one that offers us something that bit different. I don't know if any of the rest of them have that ability to pull it off, you know.
Yeah,
no, I agree. No, I do agree. It's just more so a case of how the game went for him and what Kenny has said about him previously. But no, you're right in terms of, I don't think he's a talisman. Would you class him as a talisman in parlance? Would you, Gav? Would you say, if you're writing in copy, would you say Ireland talisman Callum Robinson?
Yeah, he's
getting to that stage, isn't he?
He's the guy who either scores or creates our goals, I have to say. And if he doesn't play well, Ireland don't look a goal threat. And I thought Saturday night was a pretty good example of that.
Yeah, for me the two most attacking important attacking players for Ireland are Callum Robinson and Matt Doherty. And obviously we know that we're short of one. So then if Callum's not on his game, then we're going to be struggling with ideas.
There may be a selection conundrum in Doherty's absence now again on Wednesday. I was out of training yesterday. The vibes were there may be a slight doubt about Seamus Coleman. There was nothing concrete about it, but he was limping after the game. He's not been ruled out or anything. There is, there's scans to be done on any player with any complaints yesterday. They'll have a better idea today. That's Tuesday when we were recording. So they're not 100% sure that Coleman will be available. If he is available, do you play him again at right wing back? Do you play him at right centre back? Or do you play him at all?
I'd play him right centre back. Yeah, I'd play him right centre back. If we were playing Armenia again on Wednesday night, I would 100% go with Agbeni, a right wing back. But we probably can't in these circumstances. It'll be a bit of a roll of the dice. Although I do think Ukraine will make a hell of a lot of changes. I do think we're going to be playing against the Ukraine B team. I really, really do think we're going to be playing against the Ukraine B team. I mean, that their normal first 11, how those boys are able to pick themselves up into a game that is, by in terms of what they come up into the other night, is an absolutely nothing game, so I think they mightn't be the strongest team in the world, and maybe we will have more of the ball, or maybe we are favourites for it, I'm not sure.
Look at play Zinchenko as a banger. Like, it's mad. Like, again, in any other Premier League team, he's probably one of the best players in that position. Like, he was quality against Wales the other day. Absolutely ran that game.
He plays in midfield for them. He's left back for City, although everyone is kind of midfielder for Man City, really. Yeah. But he is midfield. It just goes to show that.
It's exactly what Austria were doing with Alaba, wasn't it? Remember, Alaba used to be left back for Bayern Munich for years, and sure, he'd go into centre midfield and run the show for Austria every single time they stepped out.
He's centre back now, isn't he?
Left centre half now, yeah.
Yeah. Michael Dillon asks a 2-part question. We won't have time to get into the first part, Michael, but he does ask, considering our inability to get goals, how close would Will Smallbone be to getting in the senior squad? David.
Do you know what? Like, if things went differently for him, he'd already be in the four. He'd already be in the senior squad. Like, he was before COVID, he was a Premier League player. He got into Southampton's first team squad. He'd made his debut. He was becoming a regular, either starting or off the bench. And then he has that cruciate knee injury, which obviously knocked the stuffing out of him. And he's got back from that now. I was at the 21s game on Friday. And he was really good. Kind of played off. He played more so off the right, but then was drifting in, and he kind of just seemed as if. And I'm not putting him at the same level, but what is the performance between him and Meepo Odobeko, who, by the way, some of his touches and awareness up front is top class. Like, there was a couple of times where the ball did bounce off him, but just like the flick for in the build up to his own second goal for Ross Tierney was brilliant. And even in the first half, I think he admitted slightly that maybe it wasn't quite what he meant for the pass through for Will Smallbone. But on Will Smallbone, he reminded me slightly of, remember when I watched Jack Grealish play for the 21s against Montenegro, just purely on the basis that he just was better than everyone. Like, he was at that level. He's too good for the 21s, I'd say, at that point. But, like, well, he's getting to that point. He just needs to play games. He's getting to that point where he'll soon be too good for the 21s. And you just hope, hasn't Hassan Hootel already said that a loan could possibly be on the cards for him? Like, he recently signed a new contract at Southampton. He just won, maybe, because he's still only a young lad, like 20, 21, where if he can get games, he could be a really, really impressive player. And I don't think he'll get called up over the next world, because the 21s have too important a game coming up against Italy. But yeah, he'll be someone who's soon, if please God he can stay fit and maintain the kind of form he's on and consistency he's on, could be really impressive, because he could just offer so much. I don't think he's quite the same as Jack Bourne in terms of a creative player, but I think he has that eye for a pass in him as well, do you know what I mean? And his goal, like his couple of goals that he scored over the last window, were really impressive.
Yeah, just what I'm taking from this conversation is that it's obviously you have to be able to make the pass, have to have the eye for the pass, but to have the confidence and the intent to play the pass is actually just as important a thing. And that's almost a mentality and a swagger that's missing from our players. He has that, do we think?
He does.
Will Smallbone.
Yeah, absolutely.
He does, and I think the biggest question mark for him himself, leaving aside where he fits into things for Ireland, is what is his position? You know, he needs to, you know, that whole the whole Phil Neville flexibility thing. He needs to decide on what his position is now over the next while. I remember I went to watch them. Can't remember. The last round of games, anyway, I was with Dan at it, and we were kind of, we had the team sheet first, and we were like, right, will Smallbone be 6, 8 or 10? Because we'd both seen him play in all three of those roles, and then out he comes and he's playing 7, and like David says, he played 7 again in the first of the two games this week. So he did. So he not that he needs to be careful, but he does need to nail a specific position in my eyes over the next kind of 2 years or so. But look, such an accomplished player, and as you say, definitely looks to have that confidence and aura about him that if he was called into a senior squad, he's not going to walk in there overawed or anything, that's for sure.
And it should be pointed, in terms of that one position, like his goals for the 21s, the first one comes from a powerful kind of run down the right hand side where he reads the pass from Meepo Adebayo and basically gets a frame shot. That's coming from him running off the right hand side. The second goal in that game comes from him coming around the back post at the left, drifting in. So he's coming in from a different angle and he has that awareness where to be to actually to score the goal. And then the third is getting in and around the centre of the box, taking a touch and absolutely connecting with a beautiful shot. And he also had a chance against Bosnia for his hat trick where he makes a run off through the middle, kind of to the right side a little bit, but again is running off. So he has that ability to where a ball is coming into him, it's back to goal and knows what's around him and he can play that link up play. But he also has the ability to run in behind. And again, what we're coming back to in that Armenia game, and no matter what team it is if you have a player who's able to keep the opposition on their toes where they don't know, right, do I have to drop off here or go with them or do I push? If a defender knows exactly what's coming, it's the easiest thing in the world, regardless of what it is, if it's pace or if it's whatever, if they know what's coming. But someone like Smallbone, and not just, I don't mean this just specifically for him because it's great and he's a fella who could hopefully come true, but regardless, that's what Ireland need, is those type of players who are able to mix it up a little bit. And because that's what you need within the game, especially when you're a team like Ireland, where you're not going to be good enough to win your game doing the one thing that you're very, very good at, like a City or the very top teams. It's being able to mix things up, but within the game and within what you're being asked to do.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. I don't know if that makes sense.
The lesson of the last few years is when the Irish senior team are doing poorly, cling to the under-21s for hope and joy. And it's working again this week. Back-to-back wins against Bosnia and then against Montenegro means they're in a fantastic position now to at least make a playoff for the European Championships. So the permutations are Sweden are playing Italy on Thursday. If Italy win that, Ireland are guaranteed second place. If it's a draw, Ireland will have second place and then they'll go to Italy with a chance to top the group. If Sweden win, then it's a little bit more complex and out of Ireland's hands. Sorry, David, I cut across you.
No, it was just one thing I wanted to say on the 21s, and it's only because, again, and it actually annoyed me when I saw a comment on one of the things talking about on the 42 site about Meepo Adebayo, where someone said, well, is he even Irish? Because he has an English accent. I spoke to him after the game. He's from Tala.
Yeah.
Like, and really annoyed me, some of that stuff.
Has anybody ever spoken Darren Connolly, no?
I know. All that stuff. But, like, but that really annoyed me, and you know, and it's hard to, just really, because he spoke really well after that match in terms of, we're talking there about lads who you want to have confidence, and Tariq, right, was the same after, after the game, like, and just how he was talking about going into the Italy game, and that mentality, like, that's the mentality of lads you want. Like, I loved the fact that Meepo Adebayo was talking about wanting to break Robbie Keane's record. Like, he's a striker, that's how he should be saying it. Now, like, there could be lads at his club or whatever saying, ah, don't build yourself up, blah, 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 all that media training nonsense, whatever. But, like, even privately, that's what you want. And listen, if he falls short, he falls short. But, like, so what? But that's what you should be. They're the lads you want coming through, who have that intent, who will have that confidence that, yeah, they could be poxy in a game for 89 minutes, but he knows that if he gets that chance, he's going to score. And one of the things that he said in that game, afterwards, where he just said he wants to run his bollocks off for this team again, but that's what you want. Like, that's just brilliant. Yeah. That's the attitude you want from some of these lads. And I can say to that commenter who put it up that he has more of a Dublin accent than I do, and it would be absolutely fantastic to see him play for Ireland.
That is saying something.
Yeah, that's excellent. But I think maybe, I don't know, this is just kind of sparked off my mind, but sometimes, you know, Kenny now, like Kenny will be absolutely slaughtered now for saying that Ireland can win the Nations League group. But I'm wondering, like, is that one of the, because I asked him last week, like, I phrased the question poorly, in fairness, but I asked him, like, it sounded too accusatory on my part. Why did you say that publicly? Not to kind of, like, criticising him. I was just kind of interesting, because no Irish manager ever talks like that.
Did he say it in response to a question, Gav? Was he asked the question?
No, he brought it up himself. It was he went into that press conference with the ambition of saying those exact words. Now, he said it in October, when the contract hadn't been finalised, and or when it seemed there at least externally there was doubt as to whether the contract would be extension would be coming and the draw hadn't been made. Do you think that's one of the reasons he says these things? Is to, you know, he'll look at, like, as we've kind of chatted through in this podcast, that the team looked like they lack confidence, that they lack intent. Is that one of the reasons why he goes and says these things?
Just breaking down inhibitions and what's been told to players for years and years and years. Listen, you still need to have that spirit and that you want to have that sense of, yeah, that the underdog spirit, because maybe that's there as well, and that allows you part of any Irish person and team. But just being that confident going into a game and saying, we can try and win this. Do you know what I mean? Like, if you listen to what's been said from Wales over the last little while, as much as everything that's happened in terms of their own player development, and, like, don't get me wrong, I think the fact that it helps to have a world-class player like Gareth Bale, and also a very, very, very good player like Aaron Ramsey. But in the last couple of days, listening to people from Wales, it was Gardy Speed, the late Gardy Speed, coming in and changing the mentality. And not changing the mentality of a group of players about what's expected of them, and actually believing that they can get stuff. And, like, for so long, you're told, like, that Ireland are crap. And don't get me wrong, like, you're crap the other night. But if it's working towards something, it's working towards a change, again, like, I know Shane said earlier, his default is to maybe back Stephen Kenny. I'm more so backing not so much him the person, but what he's trying to represent and what he's trying to change in what Irish football is. Do you know what I mean? Like, you can kind of take a result like the other night when you kind of get a feeling and a hope that it's changing what's expected of Ireland. But that, you're telling me that result wouldn't have happened against a Martin O'Neill team or a Mick McCarthy team in the second half of that season. In his second round. But that's where Ireland had gotten to. At that latter stage, where playing absolutely muck football, and not even just muck football, but just expectations and what was being fed to players and what was being fed to outside about what who we were about ourselves, it was just fucking rotten. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? So it's no harm getting away from that.
I think he said it for two reasons, Gav. I think he said it, one, because he believed it. I think he believed it. And two, I think he kind of refuses to play the safe PR game that managers normally play, doesn't it? Like, you know, you might believe it, but you don't say it publicly. Well, Stephen does say it publicly. He doesn't really play that normal. That's why he's, you know, that's why he is such an interesting character. He is different. There's no doubt he is different in a lot of ways. But he doesn't just play that foot perfect safe PR game that a lot of most other managers will, you know, if that's what he thinks, that's what he's going to say.
Yeah. Okay, let's wrap up with predictions for the Republic of Ireland against Ukraine in the UEFA Nations League on Wednesday night at the Aviva Stadium. Shane Keegan.
Shock horror, 1-1.
David Snaid.
I'm going to stick with the confidence. I'm going to go for 0-0. clean sheet.
Clean sheet, something to build on, you know, head of Scotland at the weekend. Guy.
Gav, it's such a pity that I'm not on with Maurice Brosnan at the moment. Far more content for his show. It's literally just popped up on my phone here. Paul Knurk has joined Snapchat. Notification just came up on my phone. Maurice Brosnan would have knocked great crack out with something like that popping up. That's how good Limerick are. Paul Knurk is not worried about tactics. He's joining Paul Snapchat.
He's some kind of hurling guru or something. We're already over time. We're not going to start talking about Paul Knurk as much as you obviously want, Shane, so I'm sorry. Brano, has that made the edit? We'll find out when this is published later today.
Who's Paul Knurk?
Don't worry about it, Snape. Don't worry about it. Far too long.
Thanks very much, guys. Thought that was really good. Thanks to you, as ever, for listening and supporting this show and what we do at the 42. Do get in touch if you have any questions like the lads did during the show. Get in the WhatsApp group. Details if I do that are in the episode description of this podcast. We're back on Friday, I think it is. We are doing a bonus podcast this week, reacting to Ukraine and looking ahead to the Scotland game at the Aviva on Saturday. But until then, take it easy.
Brady man.